evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My returning guest tonight is Isabel Quintero, award-winning writer from the Inland Empire of Southern California. Isabel, it's such a pleasure to talk to you again.
Yes, likewise, Mark. Thank you for having me again.
What was great is we got to talk to you because of the work that you and Zeke Pena did in photographing the life of Graciela Iturbide, which is, I think, still, this is one of those books that I've been recommending to any, like I stop people on the street and go, you know, you should really read this book. It's such a unique book. How, you've worked on other projects with Zeke. How did you get to meet Zeke and hook up with him? I meant that in the old style sense of the word.
Yeah, well, thank you for recommending our book. I met Zeke back in 2014, 2013. And it was through my first book, Gabby, A Girl in Pieces, through our publisher, Cinco Puntos Press, which is out of El Paso, Texas, which is where Zeke is from. And they put us together. So it was my first book getting published. And it was his first book cover that he'd done for a publisher. And so they just kind of put us together. And what was weird was that usually in publishing, the author and the book designer or the cover artist or even the illustrator, they don't meet. They don't talk. It's just, you know, the editor serves as an intermediary between the two, and that's how they communicate. But with Zeke, and because Cinco Puntos is so small, Zeke called me, or I think he emailed me first, and then we started texting, and then he called me, and he actually asked for my input on the cover, which is also rare to have input on, like, the process, right? Like, a publisher will ask you at the end, when the cover is done, what do you think about this? And sometimes they'll listen to you, and sometimes they won't listen to you. But in this case, Zeke involved me in the whole process. And he had actually read the book. And
by the way, I don't want to, because he said this when I interviewed him separately. He raved about your writing.
Oh, well, I'll be raving about his illustration, his artwork, because it really was, you know, it's been great to be able to work with him. Because we became friends after that, and then we started talking about other projects we could work on together. And then the Getty contacted me about photographic, and they asked if I had an illustrator I wanted to work with, and immediately I said Zeke. And then after that, we have our latest book, which is My Puppy Has the Motorcycle.
I love that book.
And thank you. And I showed Zeke the manuscript, and I really wanted him to be the illustrator, and he loved the book and he loved the idea, and we started working together. And that was another case where you know, usually authors don't get to pick their illustrators, but because we already had a rapport, we were
nice,
able to be
nice.
You know, sold as a package, and so, which was really nice, because I really do love Zeke's artwork, not only his artwork but just the person he is, and his politics and what he stands for and what he won't stand for.
Yep.
And just, you know, he's just really great to work with. He's very disciplined and he's a great editor. My writing, like the stuff that, you know, I'll show it to him first and he'll give me a bunch of feedback, because he's a great reader as well. So reader in the sense even of editing. And it's just been great to work with him. You know, with My Puppy Has a Motorcycle, I had, you know, I thought of the illustrations, I imagined them, but I never thought they would be what he came up with. You know, how beautiful and how realistic and how much he would really be able to present my memory of a specific moment in time in the book, you know.
Well, I want to talk about Gabby, Girl in Pieces. Is this your first major published work?
Gabby, A Girl in Pieces, yes.
It's a young adult novel, but I have to say this, and this is true, Isabel. I got totally, like, taken up by the book as I was reading it, and I was, like, totally enthralled. And I want to mention to people who are listening in the audience, yeah, maybe it may say it's a young adult novel, but adults can certainly read the book and get a lot out of it. I was so impressed by the way that you developed character and did dialogue. How did this come out? Have you been writing for a long time before this?
Thank you so much. And actually, I just want to mention that it just came out in Spanish. Finally, it was translated.
Thank God.
Yeah, so I've been really, you know, I've been asked by a lot of people, you know, when's it going to be translated? When's it going to be translated? And finally, it just came out, I want to say, last week.
Okay.
Last week, the week before, it was finally translated.
Well, let's set the story first. Who is Gabby?
Yeah. Gabby is a senior in high school, and she's a light-skinned Chicana fat girl. Her father is addicted to meth, and her mom has very strict ideas of what it means to be a woman. But Gabby eventually finds her way of what she believes, what kind of woman she wants to be, and she finds her voice through poetry.
And what's amazing is that your writing really captures the struggle of teens that are going through complicated lives, both between family and their social situation. And Gabby, like, became one of those people, like, you really root for her. You really want her to get everything okay. It doesn't quite completely work out at all. But, I just became really enamored of the character. Had you been publishing short pieces before this?
No, actually, that was
my God.
A work of, like, fiction. Like, I started off writing poetry, and Gabby was actually a novel in verse before it was what it is now. I'd been...
It's funny that you said that, because at one point I actually thought that this was a poetry book in disguise.
There are some sections, I'm not going to lie, you know, I cheated and I took some of the poems and I just delineated them. And so some of the sections were actually poems before. They just look like paragraphs now. But Gabby, you know, I think... she's a lot like me, and that's what I always say, right?
She's not. But you make a point that she's not you.
No, I get that question all the time.
Yep.
Is Gabby you? And I did, you know, I did grow up with a father who was an addict. I did, you know, my mom did have very strict ideas of what it meant to be a woman. You know, but that's not, you know, a lot of it is fiction, right? A lot of it is a fiction I've taken from my life, but I've also taken, you know, for example, Sebastian, that character, he's a lot of my gay male friends and family. Yep. Put together, right? Like, it's just one character. And so a lot of it is, it is fiction, you know, but
sure.
I wanted to make it as real as possible, because I would see a lot of young adult books that dealt with drug addiction, but a lot of the drug addiction had to do with the protagonist themselves, with the young person. And I just felt that we needed to have a story where a young person, you know, like a story like my story, you know, how I grew up. And a lot of people that I know grew up in a situation like that, and that we don't see ourselves in the pages of a book. You know, I'm from, you know, Riverside, Corona, the Inland Empire of Southern California. This is not like L.A. This isn't New York. This isn't San Francisco. It is a regular city, and these are regular teens doing, you know, teen things. And I wanted to put that in a book. I wanted to make it as realistic as possible so that, you know, realistic and as specific as possible so that teens could see themselves and see that they're not alone in these specific situations.
And they will get through it.
And they will get through it, you know. I do a lot of visits to schools, to high schools, and I get some difficult questions, you know, because the book does bring up some issues that some adults seem to think don't affect young people.
Oh, God.
Because I've gotten that critique before. This is a lot of stuff happening in one school year. This is, I had a couple schools try to ban the book because they called it pornographic. And I had, you know, like, well, no, this, obviously you've never watched pornography, because this book is just teens being teens. And it's a specific reality. It's a very American reality, but it's not, you know, she's not middle class. She's not,
that's
well,
right.
She's, you know, she's lower middle class, but she's not white. You know, she doesn't have this happy family. she is loved, but it's different, you know, and she's going through a lot of things at once. And, you know, I wanted those teens to know that they can get through it. And like I was saying, I visit so many schools, you know, when we can visit schools, and I get questions like, how do you, if you have a parent who's an addict, like, how do you handle that? What do you do?
Right.
You know?
Right.
I've had young women come up to me afterwards and talk about, you know, their sexual assault. And these are teenagers, right? And they say, this story of this character is exactly what happened to me. Or I relate so much to Gabby, or I relate so much to Sebastian. One of the strangest things for me, and, you know, this may be a sign of my, I don't know, narrow-mindedness or whatever, that when I started writing the book, but when I've had so many older white women who I didn't really expect to connect so much with the book tell me how much they connect with the book, because when they were growing up, this is how their mother talked to them about sex.
Wow.
And it was, you know, there's so many, I think, so many ways that different people can connect on so many different levels. And I think it's just a testament to how she's a Chicana. You know, people are always talking about the universal story. And a lot of times for people of color, for non-white writers, where that universal story is pushed, or our books aren't published because it's not seen as the universal story. But I think with Gabby, I think it's proof that our realities, our experiences, as specific as if we write them as specific as we can, they can be a little bit more universal, in the way that more people can see themselves reflected in our work than maybe some publishers might think, you know?
There's so many things that go on in this book that are interesting that I found really intelligently written about. One of the things for Gabby is her Mexicanness is a thing that she wonders about all the time, about how that all works, about where she's going to school. And that seemed to be a really subtly handled and really interesting in your book. And obviously that's an important issue for you, to be able to live with your heritage, yet at the same point you're living with other people who don't understand what you're going through with that. And family is so important to her in this book. And a lot of people may not understand the significance of family for people, from some people. And I found that really fascinating. I found the whole thing really interesting and well done.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I mean, I think Gabby's dealing with her Mexicanness was also me dealing with my Mexicanness, right? As a young person. And even at this age, you know, what does it mean to be a Chicana? What does it mean to be Mexican? There isn't just one way to be, you know, to be anything. There isn't just one way to be American. There isn't just one way to be, you know, Black. There isn't just one way to be Native. You know, there is so many, we come from so many different places. And, you know, me being a Chicana from the Illinois Empire, born in 1982, is going to have a very different experience than a young Chicana born in the Inland Empire, you know, in the year 2000, you know, or from a Chicana from Indiana or from Iowa or from New York. We're going to have different experiences and different realities because we're different people. The geography changes us, the way our parents, where our parents were from, if we're children of immigrants like me. You know, where my parents were from, they weren't from big cities, so that's going to be different, you know. They were from more rural areas, so my experience is going to be different on what it means to be Mexican than maybe somebody, or how I embody that to someone from, like, a bigger city, or, you know, someone who is indigenous Mexican, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it is, so I just wanted, in the work, I just want people, young people who read my work, to know that whoever you are, you're okay. You don't have to try to prove how Mexican you are, or how Black you are, or how whatever you are. You are who you are, and you don't have to make excuses, or you don't have to carry a card that says, you know, this is proof of my Mexicanness or my Chicanoness, right? This isn't, you're enough. You know, I want them to know that they're enough and that they're not alone and that things can get better and that they have the power within themselves to make choices to make things better, even though it's not going to be easy. You know, I tell kids this all the time, especially when they ask me about having a parent who's an addict, because when you're young, you know, you want things resolved. You want to have an answer, and you want adults to give you the answer. And the truth is, you know, I tell them it's hard. Right now you're stuck in a home with someone who's an addict, and you can't do anything about it because you're a young person. But as soon as you can, you make those choices. You can make choices in your life right now to make it better, to make each day livable, to each make each day bearable. You can do so many things. And once you make those, once you can make those choices, you can leave. You know, you can go to college. You can move out. You can do so many things. And I want them to know that maybe it's not going to be easy, but it will be better.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My returning guest tonight is Isabel Quintero, award-winning writer from the Inland Empire of Southern California. Isabel, what propelled you? What was the original inspiration that pushed you to start writing like this, to start writing a book? I mean, were you the kind of person who in high school was writing poetry? I mean, the decision to become a writer is a really tough one. It's a very tough art. But I'm always interested when I interview artists, like, what point were you really, are you really comfortable calling yourself a writer? When did that happen in your life?
I think I was probably 20, like 30,
okay.
27, when I finally decided I was okay calling myself poet, and saying that I'm a writer. But I had been writing since high school, probably since before.
What were you writing?
Poetry.
Okay.
You know, I was writing poetry, much like Gabby. So my love of poetry was pretty much the Gabby's trajectory, right? I fell in love with E. Cummings in 10th grade. and then
I did too.
Yeah, I just, you know, I remember my teacher, Miss Agard, in 10th grade, she had us memorize Anyone Lives in the Pretty How Town,
yep.
Which I can't recite now, so please don't ask me. But Anyone Lived in a Pretty How Town, and we had to memorize it, and I just, something clicked inside about the way that language can work and the way we can make language work for us, and I just started writing more and more. And it was terrible high school poetry. It was terrible poetry, you know, of a teenager trying to find her voice.
Sure.
You know, poems about, like, the boys I had a crush on. Oh, terrible poems. you know, and then in college I kept writing, but my intent was to be a high school English teacher. It was never to be a writer for young people. I thought, you know, I'll be a high school English teacher and then I'll write poetry on the side because I won't be able to make a living off of poetry. And I was a high school teacher for about a year, and I hated it, and the kids hated me. I wasn't ready. I was 23 years old.
Oh, it's really young.
And I was short, you know, shorter than a lot of the students, and I wasn't prepared. The program I was in for school, at the school I was at, it just was not, I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready. And so I decided to quit rather than to keep subjecting students to me, you know, trying to flail about, because I really respect teaching. And I teach right now, sometimes I'll adjunct, you know, at the community college. And I teach composition because my master's is in composition. But I really respect teaching, and I think teaching, and I've always believed this, teachers are the backbone of society.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't want to disrespect the profession and by forcing myself to stay in a classroom when I knew I wasn't ready. And so I stopped teaching, and then I'm lost. I don't know what I'm going to do. I decided to start my master's program. And in between the master's program and when I stopped teaching, there was a quarter or two quarters. And if I didn't take any classes, the government was going to call me, start collecting my loans. So I took a creative writing class for the first time. And I'd been writing poetry, but I'd never taken a class. And my professor, the poet Julie Pagel, she says, we're doing a workshop, and she tells me, oh, you've done lots of workshops. And I said, no, this is my first one. And she said, you need to be published. And that might have been a teacher encouraging a student, but I think that was all I needed. You know, I had a terrible marriage. I was depressed because I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. Because the only thing I'd wanted to do was be a teacher, and I failed, and I had no plan B, and here I was trying to figure it out. And I started writing, and I took a young adult lit class, which changed my life. I didn't realize young adult literature could be so great. And I started writing Gabby because I was trying to figure out, how did I get to this point in my life? You know, how did I get to feeling so lost? What did I not see? So I think failing was a blessing for me. And I think failing is an important part of life. And, you know, a lot of times we need to fail in order to grow, in order to really figure out who it is that we are and who it is that we can become.
We're going to run out of time before we have a chance to talk about My Pappy Has a Motorcycle.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Don't worry about it, because I loved hearing you talk and hearing your story. But I have to give credit to My Pappy Has a Motorcycle. What a wonderful story. And it's beautifully illustrated by Zeke. But the story is the important thing. It's a little girl driving around her neighborhood in city. And you write in the back, it's got to do with when you were growing up, from your memories in Corona, California, the lemon the lemon capital of the world. And this is sort of a love letter to your father. It's a wonderful book.
Yes, it is a love letter to my father. When I was a kid, he'd put me on the back of his motorcycle and we'd ride around. It's a really happy memory. And also going to work with my dad, you know, it is a book dedicated to my dad and dedicated to the city I grew up in, but also it's a book about, you know, working class people,
about
people who build our cities, who build homes. My favorite spread in the book is, you know, when Daisy and her dad arrive at the work site and you see all the men building a home. And you know, when I was a kid, my dad would take my brother and I to work with him sometimes. And we'd help him, supposedly. But, you know, we'd put knobs on doors and bumpers on the back of cabinets. My dad's a cabinet maker and cabinet installer.
Nice.
And so we just, you know, things that wouldn't damage anything. That's what we'd help him do. But I was always amazed that I got to see who put down the floor.
You know, like the process. Yeah.
And I think sometimes or often we forget that like a home doesn't just like appear out of nowhere, that it takes hands, like everything around us, it takes hands to be built, and fruit is picked by people, you know, our cars are made by hands. So it's really important to me in that book that, you know, that we celebrate those people, that we acknowledge that, you know, we need each other for our society to work. And for society to continue.
It's also a book that's about a neighborhood in the city, but the neighborhood goes through changes. And there are places that have changed, and she recalls that as she goes by in the motorcycle.
Gentrification is also about that.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, people, it's funny because Corona is, now it's a bigger city, but it's not... you know, it's not like LA, or it's not this cosmopolitan area, you know, it's a lot of suburbs and stuff. But a lot of the stuff in the Latinx community in Corona, like, went away, right? Like the indoor swap meet, the raspado shop. There was actually a raspado shop, a snow cone shop that I used to go to as a kid. That, you know, my dad and I went to go get snow cones one day, and it was gone. You know, it was no longer there. And so all of these things that just kind of disappeared that made the community feel a little bit more like a community,
yeah,
they just were erased. And, you know, and it was sad to me to see those things happen in favor of, you know, more housing tracts and shopping centers that look like shopping centers in every suburb in the country, right? You know, you've got your BevMo and your Target and your Best Buy and your Barnes & Noble all in one area. And that same shopping center that you see over and over and over again. And what made the area its own little place disappeared. What's been interesting is that I've gotten contact from older Corona residents telling me how much they love the book and how much they remember these places.
Nice.
You know?
Nice.
So it, you know, I'm really happy with that book.
It's a pretty cool book. It really is.
Thank you.
It looks great, but the story is really, really nice. And it there's a lot more going on to it in you know, in most big picture books. I'd recommend it highly. We're completely out of time. Don't worry about it. We'll talk again. My returning guest tonight is Isabel Quintero, award-winning writer from the Inland Empire of Southern California. We've been talking about her two of her works, Gabby, A Girl in Pieces, which is a great young adult novel, and My Pappy Has a Motorcycle, which I strongly recommend if you have a young person in the house. Isabel, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Likewise, Mark. Thank you so much for having me again. I appreciate it.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.